Thank you for joining us at Fellowship Church. For additional information, check us out at fconline.tv.
My name's Jordan. If you guys don't know who I am, I know there's a lot of new faces that keep coming in here, and that's awesome. That's what we prayed for as a church for so long. I'm an elder here at Fellowship Church. That means that I get to help lead along with Pastor Anthony and a few other elders, Lupe and Wilson, and we enjoy it most of the time, but it's definitely a calling. And so that's what I do. I've been spending a lot of time kind of behind the scenes, kind of hidden up in the nerd nest, as we so call it. That's a good term. That's actually a compliment to people who are actually nerds. They like to be called nerds. So I am nerd number one, as some people call me, and that's because I broke the number one nerd rule, which is talking to people in public. So we're here today, and so welcome here in the room. Welcome to those who are online. If you don't know, we have people that join us online from all over the country. We've had people come outside of the country even join us online live. And so we want to welcome them to this room. But that's a cool ministry. So wow, that's amazing. As well as like helping to shepherd and direct this church with Pastor Anthony, I get to oversee some of those ministries that are up there in that nest. So the sound, the visuals, and then FC Online as well. And they have their respective leaders, but I get to like help to shepherd them and make sure that that goes well. And so with that, just because I have this time up here, I kind of want to like spotlight those a little bit and say that we need more nerds. And I know who you are, and you know who you are, and we get to do this cool thing with church online, where we get to spread Jesus with technology. So we get to take the things that we like to do that are super nerdy and super weird, and people think you hang out in a cave and all that kind of stuff. You actually get to hang out in a cave for Jesus and bring the gospel to people exponentially. Like, we can only fit so many people in this room, we can only have so many services on a weekend, but online, our services are, there's infinite amounts of room for people to join us, and people do. And people have gotten saved through that ministry. How cool is that to think, like, as we sit in this room, there's people online watching right now that are meeting Jesus. And you get to be a part of that. And so, for the first time ever, like, nerds get to excel in ministry. And we need more to make that happen, because we want to do things like multiple cameras, and we want to be able to do it in better ways, but we really just need more people to do that. And so if that's you, come talk to me, come talk to Josh Bray, sign up on your card or whatever. We need nerds, okay? This is like nerd call. I'm throwing up the bat signal. We need people to do that, okay? See, they all got that. There's like two people that got that joke. So we're still in chapter 5 of Mark, and I'll have you turn there now. You can follow along in your paper Bible if you have one. We just talked about nerds and stuff. Maybe you're a little embarrassed to pull it out. It's totally fine. It's totally okay to use actual books here in this room. You can also follow along in YouVersion. The verses are going to be up here on the screen as well. But before we get into that, I have a couple more announcements. So it's because I'm the speaker, I get to talk about some more things. And is it more announcements? Yes, but I have to do it. So we still are wanting to remodel this building. God gave us this building. He miraculously placed us into this place in this time, but we want to do some updating. We've had some flooring that was donated, and we're going to be doing a lot of work in the lobby area in the next few weeks. And so we need people to also sign up and help out with that. If you are really good at that kind of stuff, we need you. If you're really good at taking instructions and being bossed around, we need you too. So sign up for that, talk to someone in the back, put it in your connection card. Somehow we need that. We also have small groups coming up. Who in here has been to a small group before? Okay, those of you who don't have your hands up have not experienced real church yet. Okay, because that's where real church takes place. And here you get to like look at me, and that's not super fun for super long. But when you're in a small group, you get to connect with other people, you get to pray about things, you get to see actual things take place, you get to see real life happening. And that's where the church actually happens, is in small groups. And so we have some small groups that are coming up on Sunday afternoons. We have some middle school ones. We have one that's out in Staten. There's no kids allowed at that one. You're welcome. And so sign up for small groups, okay? You can start signing up this week, but I can't push that enough. Like, that is really where you're going to get the most benefit out of this community, is in those small groups. So we're in week 14 of this series called Jesus. And we're going to be talking about Jesus for the rest of the year. And you better be okay with that, because we are all about Jesus here at Fellowship Church. If Jesus didn't come, live a sinless life, die, raise again, conquering Satan, sin, hell, and death, we would have no reason to be here today. We would not be here. We wouldn't have any cause to rally around. And so we decided as leadership that, hey, we need to take a year that we're just going to focus on Jesus. We're going to pick a gospel, and we're going to go through it, and we're going to be forced to look at things, as you'll see today, that normally we wouldn't pick. But because we don't want to leave anything out of the Bible, we're taking this year to focus on Jesus, because Jesus is what matters. We used to have a sign in our old building that said, Jesus is here, anything can happen. And it absolutely can happen today as we talk about him. And I want to invite you as we look at this passage today in Mark chapter 5, because this passage has so much perspective. There's so much more that we could talk about. We could look at the different perspectives, and I'm going to try to touch on those as much as we can. But I really want us to like try to put ourselves in these people's shoes. And some of you, that might be easy because you're going through a similar situation. It might be difficult for the same reason. You're like, I relate way too much to this. I don't know if I can handle putting myself in these people's situation. But I want us to really like put ourselves into these people's shoes that are about to encounter Jesus. This story is also a little bit interesting in that it's laid out a little bit like an Oreo cookie, in that there's two stories, and one of them just comes right in the middle of the other one. It just interrupts everything and takes place, and then the other story continues on. It's like a comic book where it has this big, long arc of a story, and in the middle, there's all this other cool stuff that happens, but it sort of distracts and then comes back in the end. And so this is where we're at today. So I'm going to read in Mark chapter 5. I'm going to read this entire passage that we're going to be going through today, so we have a little bit of perspective of where we're going. Then I'm going to pray, and then we're going to like really dive into like what I believe that God has for us this weekend. So starting in Mark chapter 5, verses 21 through 43, it says this. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, so now he's keeps flip-flopping on the sides of the sea. He's now on the Galilean side where he has the most popularity. We've talked about that in the last few weeks. And a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well." Other translations would translate that saved, and live. And he went with him, and a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years. I said, things you would not pick talk about in church, right? And who had suffered much under many physicians and had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, and we don't know if she said this in her heart, if she said it in her mind, or if she said it to somebody else, she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" And his disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear and trembling and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease." While he was still speaking, this is how Mark writes, remember? He's like, immediately does this, and then he did this, and then he did this. He's kind of an ADD writer in a sense, but this really just, immediately, this is what happens. While he was still speaking to the lady who's there and has been healed of this thing for 12 years and explains everything, there came from the ruler's house some who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further?" Pretty faith-filled, right? But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, "Do not fear, only believe." And he allowed no one to follow him except for Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, in a very Dr. Seuss voice, "Why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping." Yeah, I could never read that without laughing. It's serious, but it's too Dr. Seuss for me. "And they laughed at him, but he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, 'Talitha kumi,' which means, 'Little girl, I say to you, arise.' And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this." And then he gives a little bit of a parenting advice here and told them to give her something to eat. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for your word. Thank you that it's unique, that you have a reason for putting every little piece into what we read today and what's in the Bible, and we shouldn't overlook anything. I thank you that we're in this series that is forcing us to take a look at things that we may not normally want to or need to or feel like we need to, but I thank you for this time and this place. I pray that today you would do works of grace and mercy and healing and faith in people today. Like you were working last night, I pray that you would show up in a real way today. In your name, amen. Confidence is a funny thing, isn't it? Since we're on the subject, I like to change subjects really fast. Confidence is a funny thing, right? So when I say confidence, and I'm not asking for you to shout out answers, so just don't. But where does your mind first go when you think of confidence? Because a lot of people, even if someone were to ask me right now, even though I know where I'm going with this and I have all the cheat sheet up here and everything, where I immediately go is, it's just somebody who maybe is a little bit arrogant. Somebody is a little bit too sure of themselves. And that's true, that could be one, but it also could be like, if someone were to burst in here and try to do something to somebody else or bring harm to someone, you might feel confident that you could handle that situation. If I were to ask you to play on worship team next weekend, you might be confident in your abilities to do so. Some of you would be terrified. Some of you would love it. Some of you might be confident if I asked you to teach a class. Like, I could do that right now. If I asked you, hey, I want you to interview for the job of your life in the next 15 minutes, I got this. Some of you, maybe not. Some of you, you're already getting stressed and terrified at even the thought of any of those, and they aren't even happening right now. But the kind of confidence that I want to talk about is one that brings value. So when someone is confident in something, other people start to believe in it, and it brings value to something. And if you're not with me, you're like, oh, where's he going with that? I don't get it. Like, here, let's use this example. And I don't want you to lie like the people did to me last night. How many of you guys have heard of Bitcoin? Raise your hand. Okay. Some of you were here last night, and you're not raising your hand. That's a little bit weird. Like. So let me explain this to you and bring this confidence thing into perspective. Some of you raised your hand. You're like, I don't even know what it is. I've just heard it on the news before, and there's like fire, and it's now worth nothing. It's now worth $1 million. It's now worth nothing. I don't get it. What's going on? So first off, what is Bitcoin? Bitcoin, put very simply, is just digital cash. It's cash that isn't here. It's just like floating in the internet, okay? And it was designed, or it seemingly was designed by one person, but I think it was a lot more people, by a guy called, and I don't even have his name here, it's Satoshi Nakamoto. And he wrote this paper that came out on the internet in 2008, and it was just titled this, Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer cash system. A peer-to-peer electronic cash system. And that was it. And it went on to explain this new system of currency that lived entirely on the internet. That's where it lived at. And it lived specifically on this thing called a blockchain that could be checked by anything. So thousands upon thousands of computers all have this one open ledger that anyone can read so that none of them can falsify the other. And this was his idea, and people were like, okay, that's a little bit weird. But in 2009, it launched, and it was a little more than half a penny per Bitcoin, and today they sell for $12,000 a piece. Somewhere along the line, some people gained confidence in what he had said. And that confidence grew, and it began to add value to this thing that really had no intrinsic value at all. It's just floating around. It's nothing. It's just an Excel spreadsheet that thousands of people can look at that is a store of value. That's it. Now, maybe some of you guys are like, I'm bored. We're done. I have no faith in Bitcoin at all, no confidence. I have no idea why it's worth that. But you can't deny that enough people are confident about it that it's now worth $12,000 and not half a penny. That's a pretty big deal. And that's all confidence. And if you don't believe me, let's use another example. Because you probably do believe in this. Right? It's not backed by gold. It used to be. So there's nothing I could go and like turn this into that's going to be of value. The only thing that gives this value is competence. It's a belief in this system, and that a governing agency stepped in and said, this is legal tender. It says right on, it's legal tender that it should be taken for debts, both private and public. And that's it. But if I were to say, like, I'll give you this $2 bill, which is pretty cool. I never like spending $2 bills because I never know when I'm going to see one again. Because they're just, like, weird. They're cool. I don't know why they don't make more of them. But anyway, it's so that only has value because of confidence and because some governing agency says so. Even though we have this thing called inflation, because it's a infinite resource that they can keep printing. I have this slide here that shows what inflation does, and this is what you could have done in 1929, and this is what you can do with $20 today, and yet we still believe in it. And there's no reason not to. I mean, there's a lot of people that have had success with this. And you might say, well, yeah, but this is physical, and I can see it. Well, 70% of it is digital, too. And you believe in that, too. I believe that if I go down to the store and I swipe this, as long as I have money in there, that I can get something. That it's going to be taken, and it's gonna have value, but it solely has value because we have confidence in that system. It could be here today and gone tomorrow because all the confidence is lost. We've seen that in other countries happen. I had a friend that gave me $1 billion bill the other day from Zimbabwe. You know what it's worth? Not $1 billion, okay? He wouldn't have given it to me if it was worth $1 billion. It's worth like a dollar because of inflation and a system that was just totally messed with. And so it drove the value of it down. And people don't believe in it anymore. So it has no value. The confidence was lost. We have this confidence in this currency. Maybe you're thinking like right now, like, where are we going with this? Here's where we're going. Faith and confidence really go hand in hand. Some of you that are analytical like me, because if I was in the audience listening to me right now, I'd be like, you're wrong. Like, you're just wrong. Sorry. I'm giving away all my cards today, right? So it's like, that guy is weird. Yes, I am. Faith and confidence go hand in hand. My wife is amening that up here. Okay. Faith, defined by Google, because who uses a dictionary anymore? If you type it in, it will pop up and it says this about faith. I actually had a boss ask me that this week. Who uses a dictionary anymore? Like, I don't even like computers, and I haven't owned a dictionary in years. Like, that was an actual conversation I had this week. So I Googled this, and it comes up with this definition for faith. It says, it is a complete trust or confidence in someone or something. That's what Google defines faith as. Now, the Bible defines faith as well. And it says something similar. It says in Hebrews 11:1, now faith is the assurance of things hoped for. Now, this word assurance in the King James Version is substance. In the NIV, it's translated confidence. So now faith is the assurance, the substance, the confidence of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Things might be invisible, but because of the confidence in them, they have value. We believe in them, and we continue to grow that. This word for assurance, for substance, for confidence, really at the root of it is substructure. So it's what it's saying here is that faith is what everything is built on. If you don't have a good substructure, what's built on it is going to be weak. So this faith is the substructure. It's our confidence. It's our assurance of things that we can't see yet. Now, a few weeks ago, we talked about the mustard seed type faith. And I love that. I love that idea that Jesus throws out there. He's like, this is the tiniest seed, and it grows into this huge tree. All you need is just this little bit. And if you have this much faith, I'm going to meet you there. And I'm going to fill in all the gaps. And I'm going to have faith where you can't have faith, but just have a mustard seed faith. And moving out in faith, once you even have that, just absolutely takes some risk. And we see that in these stories. That's why I wanted us to kind of put ourselves in these people's shoes, but I want to take us a little bit further and explain exactly what's going on here as best I can in the time that we have. Both of these people that approached Jesus took a huge risk. But before they took that risk, they had heard what he'd been doing. They heard the stories, and it built this confidence in them that they could approach him, that they could take that risk because of the confidence that was already surrounding Jesus. So the first part of this story, Jairus, he's described as one of the rulers of the synagogue. He is most likely a Pharisee, not the biggest fans of Jesus at this time. And to fall down at the feet of Jesus, in the midst of the synagogue, in this crowd that is around Jesus, is a big deal. Like, he's at his wit's end. Like, he is done. He has no other options. And he says, like, if you just come and just lay a hand on my daughter, I know that she will be saved. So he steps out and he takes this risk, falling at Jesus' feet. And what does Jesus do? He doesn't even seem to skip a beat. It's like, all right, let's go. Immediately he leaves. Let's go. And what moved Jesus to do that, to drop everything so quickly? Faith. He saw this guy's faith, and he didn't skip a beat. Let's go. But immediately, and this is where we get the interruption in the story, outside the synagogue, this lady shows up. She doesn't even show up and like approach Jesus like he just did. She just says, hey, I know that if I can just touch his clothing, that I'll be healed. But the risk this lady is taking is huge. See, it says that she had been bleeding, hemorrhaging for 12 years. We're just going to blow past the awkwardness of a man up here talking about this for a second, because the Bible talks about this. And so it's got to be important. So what did I do, my inquisitive mind? I went out and said, I want to see what symptoms she had and see if she were to go to a doctor today, what she would be diagnosed with. And I seriously can't make this stuff up. I read it and I was like, no way, this has to be a joke. What she would most likely have been diagnosed with today is something called menorrhagia. Rage. Men and rage in this diagnosis, right? Okay, so that you can't make that up. I had to like go, it's a long word, and I'm like, there's no way it's even pronounced that way at all. But it is. Menorrhagia. What is menorrhagia? If you don't want to know, plug your ears now because it's about to get real. This is what it is. It is described as an abnormally heavy and long menstruation that causes enough cramping and blood loss that it makes normal daily activities impossible. For 12 years. 12 long years. I've never experienced one time of this, and she's having to do this for 12 years. 12 years of absolute hell on earth. Not able to do anything. But the bigger deal is this. She would have been considered unclean by the law. And anyone she came in contact with would be made unclean according to the law. And by the law, for doing that, she could have been killed. She could have been stoned for that. And yet she takes a risk knowing that she would come out and she would have to go through this tight crowd, and she would touch Jesus' clothing. Not only is she making everyone else that she comes in contact with unclean by the law, she's doing that supposedly like that's what that she's risking to do with Jesus. But what happens? He turns around and he meets her in that. And he stops to tell her what's actually happening. He notices this touch amongst everything else because it's this faith, this power that goes out because of the faith of this woman who's at just the end of her rope. We think about this, like I've dealt with chronic pain since 2007. Day in, day out, never had a day where I haven't experienced some sort of pain. And I'm sure it's not even near what this lady was going through, but it is an inescapable thing that just becomes identity to you. And even noticing, even being recognized for that and having someone even ask you, like, are you doing okay today? Is just awful because you've just now got it out of your mind. And this lady is now risking it all through this crowd 12 years into this. And Jesus, he turns around and he says, what just happened? And she approaches him in fear. That's why she's so afraid. But instead of her making everyone else unclean and making Jesus unclean, he makes her clean. And then in an instant, he changes who she is. He says, daughter. He's now saving her from an identity that she had. He's saving her from the crowd that's around her, and he's saving her spiritually. He says, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. This word healed is a dual word. It's meaning both spiritual and physical. So why does Jesus stop to even say anything? She's already been healed. He's on mission to go save this little girl, but he stops because the most important thing to point out for him is that, A, you are now my daughter. Yes, miracles surround me. Yes, that points to me as God, and that's what was foretold, and that's how you know, and that's how confidence is built. That is how faith in me is built. But the biggest deal is that you have been healed on the inside. And so big of a deal that I'm stopping what I'm doing to give you attention to change who you are and to let you know what really happened. Have you ever wondered, because I've had this said to me a lot, like, I'm not going to go to church because there's no way Jesus could fix this. Like, I've done so much, there's no way. This story should give anybody hope. If they really take this in context, this should give anybody hope that you are not going to muddy Jesus. You are not going to dirty Jesus. No matter what you bring to him, you're not going to make him unclean. He's going to make you clean. And that's the biggest deal, is that you would be saved, not of a disease, but of your uncleanliness on the inside, that he would fix that and give you a different identity. But what moved Jesus to action? Again, faith. He was moved to action by this faith that he felt amongst the crowd. But do you notice what drives these people to even have faith? There has to be a need, right? There has to be a fear or a need or something. Jairus and this woman wouldn't have really shown up if they didn't have anything. Maybe they would have, but they had this need and this fear that, and they needed an answer. They needed something. They needed something to hang on to. Anthony said a few weeks ago that fear, or the solution to fear, is faith. And that's great. I wrote that down. I'm like, that's awesome. That's something to hang on to. Like, that totally makes sense. I get it. But what's going on there? How do you get from fear to faith? So if I'm afraid, like, just have faith. Well, that's a dangerous thing to say. Just have faith. You'll be fine. Let me tell you how I view fear. Because we've talked about fear here, and everyone has kind of a bit of a different perspective on fear. And I had dinner with someone last night, and I explained to them some things that I had done in my life. And they realized I was not lying, that I have chased fear a decent amount in my life. Because fear and I have been friends. We just kind of hang out, and I seek fear. I've sought fear through my life, not in an unhealthy way, like I want to go see a ton of scary movies or something like that. It's just like a rush, like do things that are dangerous and whatever. But to me, I realized this last summer, I'd never been asked this, like, what is fear to you? How do you view fear? And my immediate answer, without even skipping a beat, was fear is feedback. It's feedback into a system where a lot of different emotions happen, and it helps me make a decision. It helps me course correct. It pushes me to do the things that maybe I need to do. And maybe you view fear a little bit differently. Maybe it plagues you. That's fine. But when fear is viewed this way, it is powerless. It doesn't control me. I just use it amongst other emotions that come up to push me somewhere. And in that sense, it's powerful, but now it's in my hands. And that's really what happened in these stories, is that these people had a fear, and it drove them to faith. But why? Why? There's still this gap between fear and faith. And this begs the question, is like, okay, so if these things that are fearful and cause a need and are clearly horrible are pushing people to have faith in Jesus, is he causing these situations to happen to make people need him? And I don't even want to entertain that question, because I believe wholeheartedly that we serve a good and gracious and loving God. But I can tell you this, he uses those situations. He absolutely uses these situations that are horrible for good. That's how good he is. He can take this really bad situation and use it for good. But this lady had heard what was said. So she had a fear, and then she hears these things surrounding Jesus. Hears these things that are happening from other people and stories that are being told, and her faith rises up in what Jesus can do. And that's cool. She it doesn't even seemingly say that she had a lot of friends that pushed her to do this. She just like heard it, had faith, and went to do that. And that's, I can honestly say I'm probably not that cool of a person all the time. And I would argue that most of us probably aren't. We need a little bit more help than this lady had. And so I think sometimes we need to be those people that are helping each other out and building each other's faith. But in order to do so, like I already said, you know what a really dangerous thing to say is? Just have more faith. Like, oh, that situation that you just explained to me is terrible. But you should just have more faith. I would imagine that like people just want to punch those words out of the air. It's like, stop even saying that. You don't know my situation. How can you tell me to have more faith? But this phrase really has been demonized. There's been people that have said, like, you shouldn't say have more faith. But it seems like Jesus says it here. And so if Jesus can get away with it, and we're supposed to be like Jesus, why can we not say that? Why is that so mean sounding of us to say? And I think that question is answered here as we move on in the story. Because directly after this interaction with this woman, some people show up that are from Jairus' house, and they start to like whisper to him as this is going on, as this woman is being healed of this 12-year affliction, and she's being saved and gaining salvation from Jesus, and this huge thing is happening in this crowd. These people show up, and they say, sorry, your daughter's dead. I mean, that's really abrupt, right? Like just, hey, stop bugging the teacher. She's dead. It's over. Sorry, he's too late. Pretty faith-filled, right? Jesus hears what they're saying, And what does he say to him? Don't fear, just believe. That word believe, it's faith. Don't fear, have faith. So if Jesus says it, why is it so insensitive of us to say it? And just to be clear, I think it is insensitive of us to say. But how is Jesus saying it? Because this sounds really mean. But Jesus knows that just a second ago, this is the man who was laying down in front of him, absolutely having faith that if he came and just laid his hand on his daughter, that she would be healed and saved. And now these people show up to say, don't worry, she's dead. Jesus is standing in front of this woman who's just been healed. It says while he's standing there, they show up to say, all hope is lost. And as Jesus is saying this, it's in the context of this woman who has just been healed. He knows that he had faith a moment ago, and this woman has just been healed of this 12-year hell and saved, and her identity has been changed to a daughter of God. Saved from the people around her, saved from sin, saved from this disease and this torture. And these people show up and say, sorry, it's done. He can't help us anymore. And Jesus is in the context of that saying, don't fear, Jairus. Look at this. Have faith. Have faith, if for no other reason, because you just witnessed this. And then Jesus proceeds on, and he takes just Peter and John and James. Why does he only take them? Here's my wild guess, because I don't know. My wild guess is he's already got a lot of faithless people in the crowd, and he wants to take some people that have a higher potential of having faith and stop talking to this Jairus guy and giving him bad ideas. So he takes his closest friends with him. And Jesus arrives. There's this mourning going on. These are professional mourners. Like, they're paid to do it. They're good at it. They're just good at crying. And they're all surrounding this house of this girl who is supposedly dead. Jesus shows up, has his Dr. Seuss moment. They laugh at him. And what does he do? He shoves him out of the house, and he just goes in, and he grabs the hand of this girl, and he says, get up. You're just sleeping. Get up. Give her some food. She's going to be hungry. Death is a thing, apparently, that causes great hunger. And they're amazed. I mean, why wouldn't you just witness this thing? Like, don't fear, have faith, and then boom, she's back alive. Don't fear, have faith. Now, miracles were a part of what Jesus did. And I think that we get stuck on this a lot. I think that I fully believe that Jesus heals today. He heals a lot more than we think. But miracles were not his number one thing. They had to happen. They had to happen because they proved and they built confidence in Jesus. They built faith in Jesus. They brought value to who he was and a belief in what he was doing. And because it was foretold that the Messiah would be surrounded by these miracles, the miracles were going to happen. They had to happen, but they were not the number one goal. I had a friend once tell me, like, all the people that Jesus healed and raised from the dead in the Bible are dead now. Let that settle in for a second. It's not something you think about when you're reading that. I'm like, oh, right, so what's the point? Like, he is healing to bring glory to God. It's part of his plan. But his number one thing is to save people. That's why he stopped to let the lady know. She knew she was healed. She already knew. But he stopped to tell her what really happened. Like, you are healed of your disease, but the big deal is that you are saved. You are now my child. You had faith in me, and you are now going to be with me. Your identity is now in me, not this disease. Do we have confidence in what Jesus can really do? Honestly, like, think about that. I include myself in that because I wonder sometimes. Do we truly have faith? Do we truly have confidence in what Jesus can and will do? Because both of these people were running to Jesus as the answer because they heard something. They heard the confidence, they heard the faith that was surrounding Jesus. Let that sink in for a second. If they hadn't heard what Jesus was doing, they probably wouldn't have shown up. So do we talk about what Jesus is doing with confidence in our life? Because people are listening. Do we show with confidence and faith what Jesus is doing in our lives? Because people are watching. That may be all they see and they hear, is just the confidence. I think we make this really complicated. We're like, well, just go to lead people to Jesus. Do you want to meet Jesus? You don't? Okay, I'll move on. We need to talk about this stuff because it will build confidence. It will build value in who people see Jesus as. Do you remind those around you? When I say that, I mean here, in your small group, at church. Do you remind them what Jesus has done for you and what Jesus has done for them? I don't know that I do that enough. Because I don't want to be a church that just goes around like hearing a sob story and like, I'm sorry you were diagnosed with that. You should just have more faith. I want to be a church that says, that is not cool. But look at all this stuff that Jesus has already done. I don't think he's going to let us down this time. If for no other reason, let's believe in faith and let's remember what Jesus has already done. And let that build our faith for whatever it is that we're going to approach today or tomorrow or the next day. Because some of you might be getting bad news this week. I don't say that to like speak it over you or anything like that, but it's just reality. Life is terrible sometimes. And someday, any one of us is going to get some bad news. We need to be a church that reminds ourselves constantly what Jesus has already done so that when things like that come, we don't have to be told to have more faith because we're so focused on what Jesus has already done. If for nothing else, Jesus has saved us. He's changed my life. I can do anything. You take whatever you want away. You cannot take that. And so I can have faith solely because Jesus has already done something. And if he's done all that, what's one more thing? Just one more thing. Would you bow your heads? Maybe you walked in here, and I do this because I want us to be in a place where we can think and not be distracted by things going on around us. And you're like, I'm really beat up, and I don't have a lot of faith for what I'm going through. I think that this last few weeks was specifically for you. And if we're being honest, I think most of us probably walk in here at least a little bit beat up each week. And it's easy to read these stories and think, you know, I would really just like to be healed instantly like these people. But we forget to read into the story a little bit and realize this woman had been needing a solution for 12 years. Jesus showed up and it was instant. Absolutely, but there was 12 years that preceded that. And I shared last night that I had an addiction to pornography for 12 years or longer. I really lost count. And in an instant, when I walked into a service at a church in Seattle, Jesus met me, and he showed up, and it was gone. And I've had a lot of people say, like, I want that. I want that instant healing. But it was not instant for me. Sure, that moment was instant, but there was a lot of years leading up to that. There was a lot of prayer that went on for me for that. And so don't let a not instant answer to what you're asking for in faith discourage you. Let it just encourage you to press in more. To look at the things that already have taken place, that already are done, that already are wiped away, made clean, fixed. To build your faith for whatever it is that you're facing now. Or whatever it is that you may come in contact with or face in the future. And I want to ask you to do something a little bit different today. We have prayer that's going to be up here on the left and the right. And I think that we don't take advantage of that enough. And so I would absolutely ask you to take advantage of that. I would love to see just lines of people waiting. Like we have to spend extra time praying for everybody. That would be an amazing problem to have. But I also want you to reach out to the people around you in this room today as we sing and worship Jesus and bring praise to him and all the things that we do normally, and ask someone to remind you of what Jesus has already done for you. To give you reason to have faith, to give you reason to have confidence in what Jesus can do. And I want you to turn that around and remind them as well. Maybe you're in here and you're like, I don't even know Jesus. I now know that I need him in my life. And here's what's cool. So the Bible says that if you just believe on Jesus and believe in what he did and that he came and he lived a sinless life and died and rose to conquer sin and hell and death, that you will be saved. That's what it takes, is that mustard seed faith. And yeah, there's other stuff that comes along with that afterwards. But you don't need to know everything. All you need to know is Jesus. And just believe in what he is and have confidence and faith in who he is and what he does. If that's you today, I'm not going to count to three or anything. I just want to ask you right now, like, if you feel that, you're like, I need Jesus now, just raise your hand. I want to pray with you. I want to encourage you. And maybe you don't even have enough faith for that, and that's totally fine. I would ask you to do something a little bit different too. Find someone around you. Maybe you don't even know him. Just say, hey, do you know Jesus? And if you do, tell me what he's done in your life. Tell me how he's made your life better. And wait for the confidence and the faith to be built because you get to hear about what he's done. God, we thank you for today. We thank you for your word. The freedom that we have to come here and to read these stories and to see what it was like to be around you and to hear your words. I pray that you would just continue to grow us in faith, that we would be able to see even the tiny things that you do that we maybe don't even notice on a daily basis that should give us faith, that should give us confidence, that should encourage us to just continue on, to have faith for just one more thing at a time. God, we love you. In your name, amen.
Thank you for listening to this message from Fellowship Church. Please consider supporting our mission by visiting us at fconline.tv/give.